Birshus, Rabbi Oram in absentia. Merv Rabosai, cherished colleagues. I was asked to speak about the chicken fund, but there was nothing left to say. Every time I had an angle, you covered everything. All I can say is I noticed that the rabbinic sponsors, there's no rabbis I respect more than Rabbi Lander, Rabbi Schoenfeld. So that should say enough to everyone who knows him even better than I do. The only thing I was thinking about, you said this also, is that people were hit up for sucker all the time. People said, give me a dime, give me a quarter. But the one thing that always melts my heart when someone says they're hungry, then I don't think, should I or shouldn't I, just give. Okay, on to our subject. Someone once categorized Jews as you have, there's the cardiac Jew, the one who feels Jewish at heart. There's the gastronomic Jew, the one who likes chopped liver and gefilte fish and bagels and lox, etc. Then we once added the alimony Jew, the one who's willing to pay for it, but they'll be damned if they'll live with it. And then I was thinking, here in Elul, there's also the cup yid. Where's your head? I know it's at the end of your neck. But where's your head? Where do you really feel a sense of that you belong? Chochum mahu omer. Russia, a person is what they talk about. A person is, in New York City and many other cities in this country, there's a sports radio network. And not all that long ago, I rented a car in LaGuardia Airport, put on the radio, and it was said to the sports radio network, it was the most animated discussion I've ever heard in my life. Will he hit it? Could he hit it? Jerry from the Bronx, Larry from Westchester, Cecile from Jersey. Will he hit it? Could he hit it? Should he hit it? Could he hit it? Was gehacken gerät. Until I discovered this game took place in 1957. But this is where they're at. If someone's talking about, I tell my students, when you're dating after Pesach, so if he's talking about himself for sports, this says a lot about the person. I heard the story told about the Panovich Rav, and to be honest, I heard it also about Rabbi Lacharif. I don't know which one is the genuine. But he was looking at Leib Vilkamir, Leib Rubin, they can't call from the town they came from, was looking for a son-in-law. Where's the best place to look? Obviously not in the pubs, that's hard on the liver. You look in yeshiva. So he went to the Rosh Hashiva and said, who's the best boy in yeshiva? And the Rosh Hashiva said, they're all the best. And who's the one who's like your son? They're all like my son. And who's the one who's like your only son? They're all like my only son. Very unproductive conversation. It happened then, it happens all the time. Then the Rosh Hashiva said, I'll tell you what, I propose going to Beis Medrash, deliver a shiur, at the end, ask a piercingly analytical question, open up a Rambam. Whoever can answer it, you'll know that he is the best. And this is precisely what he did. Deliver the shiur, open the Rambam, ask a hard question, and who can answer this? Total silence. No. So he gets into the wagon. He goes on to the next time, he's been in the same routine. Running out, says, Rebbe, Gefrechte, you asked a hard Rambam, what's the answer? He said, that's my son-in-law. He doesn't know, but he wants to know. That's the one that I want. Here again, I tell my students, you're on a date after Pesach. And you ask a question, he says, I don't know. This is not for you. I don't know, but I'll look into it. He cares. There's concern. What are we speaking about? What interests us? Where's our cup? Rosh Chodesh Elul, the day we begin blowing shofar, 3 years ago fell out on September 1st. Which in Israel is the first day of the secular school year, Mamlachti schools. And I was asked to speak in Yeshiva Rishon LeZion, blistering hot day, picked me up in a taxi, air conditioning was blowing, and the only way to get to this yeshiva was to go through the courtyard of a public school. Here it was the first day of school, we're in the middle of recess, everyone was fraternizing, couldn't get through, as taxi drivers like to do in Israel. And he's honking and honking and honking. Yeah, honking. Nobody's moving. Finally, this he or she Whenever my wife expecting, we're always called Rabbi Heshi. Maybe it was Heshi. It assumes its identity. And even nowadays, the earrings don't even tell you. Anyways, it threw its mane back and said, Shemanu, we heard. So the driver rolled down the window and said, Zilo must be Grak Lishmoa. Chavim Gam Lazuz. It's not enough just to hear. You have to move as well. I thought, that's the message of the shofar. It's not enough just to hear. To move as well. And this is where we're holding now. What's going to motivate us, catalyze us, to make the move? Everyone says they want to live, and life is so important. I spoke in a yeshiva for kids at risk. I asked the boys, what is the thing you like most in life? And they all answered, those that spoke, what do you like most in life? They all said, we like to sleep. I said, you're going to love death. There's nothing more akin to it. Rabbi David Orlovsky points out, it's this time of year around Rosh Hashanah when they change the clock, and everyone heralds this by saying, yay, one more hour of sleep. How moronic and imbecilic. If you want life, you have to be productive with life. To use the time productively. To sleep more? That's what we want? No one sleeps in when they go to Disneyland. At 4:30 in the morning, everybody's outside on time for the ski trip. So if life is important for Yom Lerayim, to get up for Slichus, to be on time, it has meaning for us. Agnon has a story called Lo Lamala Mizeh, which no one ever heard of, but I'm not saying you're Hebrew, you're not cultured, but the story goes like this. As you know, Misnagdin, Litvaks are not very sympathetic to Hasidim. And these Hasidim were saying how their Rebbe, and the reason the Misnagdin make fun is that they're so attached to the Rebbe, and they attribute to him such remarkable feats. And the Hasidim were saying, but our Rebbe, the greatest of all, is Slichus. And he was so, he thought they're so naive and pathetically unrealistic. And he decided he's going to prove to them how ridiculous they are about the Rebbe. So he made that long, grueling trek to where the Rebbe was, this Misnagid, to prove to them the Rebbe is a charlatan and a faker. And he goes the first day, Slichas, where's the Rebbe? The Rebbe gegnan Slichas in Himmel. He went to say Slichas in Shemayim. He said, could you wake up? He's not in Shemayim. I'm telling you, that's where he went. So the next day, where's the Rebbe? He's not here. Where is he? He went to say Slichas in Heaven. They're so naive. He said he's going to prove once and for all. So he lays in the ambush for the Rebbe. He waits outside early, early in the morning. And he sees the Rebbe go out of the house. He throws an axe over his shoulder. He goes out to the woods. He chops timber and brings it to an almana, to a widow. She should have wood for the winter. Next day comes to shul and they say, what do you say about a Rebbe? I get down in Slichas in Himmel. He goes to say Slichas in Heaven. And the Misnagid said, in lo lamala mizeh. If not higher. To use time productively, that means you thought about things, you're using your head properly. Zechreinu l'chaim. How can a person have dignity? It's like a sugar daddy. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Avinu Malkeinu, a life of sustenance without pestilence. Gimme, gimme. So the onomatopoeias in Israel are different than in America. American dog would go to Israel, no one would understand him. Because over here they say ruff ruff and bow wow. Or in Israel they go hav hav. And the word hav means, in Aramaic, to give means hav. So the Medrash makes fun of him, sound like a pack of dogs. Hav hav, give, 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 give. How can we have dignity? We're always saying give me, give me, give me. The long list. So the answer is Zachareinu L'chayim, the operative word is Lemancha. For your sake. I wish to teach your Torah. But if I'm plagued with laryngitis, I can't convey the words. For your sake, allow me to teach. If we're involved in war, then all our resources go to defending ourselves. We can't serve you. Lemancha. Zechrein l'chaim, I don't know about in America, but in Israel you pay on credit. And a guy comes the end of the month to the makolet, he owes 1,000 shekel, and somebody else owes 10 shekels. Said, that's not fair. Why is he paying only 10 when I have to pay 1,000? He said, Chuchum, I didn't determine this. He buys two lebens, you buy so much. You're determining yourself how much you owe. You're making up the bill. If we want life, we have to be deserving of life. The tshuva process begins with recognition of contrition, of charata. We've made wrong, we wish to rectify. Which requires an arrow of angst, a prick of consciousness that we've done wrong, which people don't like to admit. Every time I go to jail, every time I visit jail, in Israel there's a dynamic tshuva movement in penitentiaries, and I have a modest role, I tell stories to prisoners. Very captive audience they are. The buses to catch or movies to miss. And every time I visit jail, I'm amazed that no one in jail is guilty. Now, I have no idea what a jail looks like in America. I have in my mind's image, you know, scars and lacerations and tattoos. But you go to an Israeli jail, everyone is such a boichikol, they look so wholesome. And you wonder, what in the world did they do? I mean, they can't all be there for jaywalking and littering. But Chazal of Torah, you may not remind a sinner of their past misdeeds, so don't ask them, as curious as I am. But everyone always tells me they're innocent, and only society is guilty. It says once with a friend of mine, a little less sensitive, this was a maximum security prison, fellow was there for homicide. He asked him, what did you do? He said, I don't know. I got to an argument and pitom, suddenly he died. But if we don't recognize that we've done wrong, how can we ever rectify? The Baal Shem was traveling to Talmidim in a wagon, and they're clippity-clopping into a village. And just as they were coming into the village, another wagon was coming out, and the Baal Shem reined in the horses. And he noticed that this driver had a very melancholy expression, disenchanted, crestfallen. And the Baal Shem for a long time, maybe 20 minutes, the expression lightened up, and then he turned around the wagon and went back to the village from whence he just exited. Later that afternoon, the students of Baal Shem met this man and said, tell us, what makes you so special? Oh, I'm not special. Oh, yes, you are, but I'm not. It can't be that our master spoke to you for so long, unless you're a very special person. But I'm not special. But you are. But I'm not. What did he say? Do you really want to know? Yes. Okay. In our village, there's a man who has a very unusual livelihood. He buys items that are very inexpensive where we live. He travels great distances. He sells his items that are very expensive. And he buys his items over there that are very expensive, pardon me, very cheap. He travels all the way home, plies the great seas, goes through the forests, and sells them home where they're very expensive. From this he turns a handsome profit, but enables him to learn for several months uninterrupted. Us villagers got together, and we came to the conclusion that he doesn't realize how much we cherish his friendship, because he's gone on these long, protracted journeys. So we coordinated with his wife. We found out when he's coming home. We gathered in his house. He came and we said, surprise! Happy friendship! And he was so tickled. He took the satchel of money earned on the trip, placed it in the bookcase, and he came inside to celebrate with us. Now, when I saw him put that money in the bookcase, I thought to myself, the man is reckless. He's negligent. I think he knows us all that well. And I decided I'm going to teach him a lesson. And I got up, surreptitiously, clandestinely, conspiratorially, I took the satchel of money, slipped it into my jacket, and I went home. Now, I had no intention of stealing the money. I only wanted to teach him a lesson. I go home. I wait about an hour. I go back to return the money. And I look through the window. I see the entire party is going berserk, looking under the rug, through the couch, tearing the bookcase to pieces. If I would have come in then, they would have hung me up like a sneak thief. So I went back home. And I wait another hour. I wait another hour. I go back to the party. And I look through the window. See, the whole party disbanded. And the sheriff was interviewing him. Did you see anyone suspicious? Anyone who walked out in the middle? Anyone who aroused your suspicions? They would have given me cufflinks. I mean, you know what I mean. So I went back home. I wait another hour. I go back with a satchel of money, and to tell you the truth,
All I wanted was to return the money. I didn't want it. He learned the lesson. I just want to give it back. I look through the window. I see him sitting on the floor like a mourner, ripping out his hair. His wife is berating Yishuv, Shaitav us to this Kreton. It was a horrible scene. It was terrible. There was no way I could walk in then. I went back home. I fell asleep. I woke up in the morning. I grabbed the satchel of money. I also took my talis and tefillin. I went to Shul to daven. And after daven, I went to his house. And I'm about to knock on the door. And I raise my hand. And my knuckles are poised. And I'm just about to rap. And I'm just about, about. And I'm just. I couldn't do it. I went home, but I couldn't go home. If I went home with the money, my wife was, the whole town was told, they know I was the one who stole. I went back home, and I hit upon the following ruse. I hired a wagon, and I was going to claim that I was going into his business. And after 2 weeks, I had feigned in the forest, I looked what I earned his money, and I said, this is what I earned. I feigned beginner's luck. In 2 weeks, this is what I earned. And that's when your master stopped me and said, I know your intentions were not malevolent. I know, in fact, they were benevolent. You have to muster the courage and the fortitude to admit that you were wrong and confess that you made a mistake. And when he said this to me, it was like a new ray of light was shown upon me. And he said, I promise you, they put you on trial. I, so Baal Shem, will come and testify on your behalf. If you're from England, on your behalf. When he said this to me, it was like a new ray of light was shown upon me. I thought I'd sealed the coffin with the nails of my guilt, but the master showed me there's a way out by admitting that I was wrong. And that's where I'm heading now, to admit that I was wrong and repair the damage. That's where we are right now, in these days leading up to Rosh Hashanah, to admit we've made mistakes, simple mistakes, profound mistakes, life mistakes, but not just to admit them, but to act upon them, not just to hear it, but to move. And we begin with Charata, which is a process that brings us to Yom Kippurim. We're trying to achieve three things based on Torah of Yashaber, Zichrono Livracha. And these three things are Mechila, Slicha, and Kapara. Mechila is a legal term, borrowed from civil jurisprudence, that means to release. If Beryl owes Shmerel $20, and Shmerel says, can I have my money? He said, sure, next week. He waits another week. He said, may I have my money? No problem. Give me another 4 months. Okay. Waits 4 more months. Can I have my money? Money. Yeah. Give me another 1.5 years. I'll be happy to pay. At this point, Beryl, perspicacious, perspicuous, judicious, provident, erudite, clairvoyant, sagacious individual, realizes he's not getting his money back very expeditiously. And he may, if he wishes, exercise his privilege of being mochel and release Shmerel from the debt. And once he releases him, he no longer owes. Our situation with the Almighty is an impossible situation. There is no way we can ever pay back all that which we owe. We have no other recourse but to ask God to be mochel and release us. But we're not satisfied. We want God also to be soleach and forgive us. But even if we're forgiven, we recognize that by sinning, there's a dynamic. It leaves a blotch and a stain and a blot carved in the very spiritual infrastructure of our soul. We want that husband-wife closeness that was prior to the sin. By way of analogy, you're driving your car down the road, the bull comes skirting on the road and you hit the brakes, you hit a kid. They right away take him to the hospital to operate for the pressure from the brain. He dies on the table. The last thing in the world you wanted was to injure this child. And let us say his parents are very philanthropic and generous people, charitable people, and they forgive you. But how can you live with yourself? The child is no more. That's the chiddush of tshuva and kapara, that God rewrites the book. It never happened. In the world at large, if you sin, you're a sinner. If you cheat, you're a thief. You're the ex-con. We have in our parsha, v'nikla chicha v'aynecha, if you do tshuva, it never happened. For we're all writing a book. The book of our lives. Let us say every day a page, So you're coming towards the end of the book. You're 116 years old, and you want a good ending. And from now on, only tshuva, ma'asim tovim. No more lashon hara, till them all day long. 116, 117, 118, 119, 120. So you're called above the great book review. So God says, how is the book? And you smile through your dentures and you say, couldn't have written a better book myself. And God says, over here, page 23, big stain over 23. Did you see the ending? What is the numa? What is ending? 116, 117, 118, 119. On 23, there's a stain. But what about the end? There's a stain over here. The Chiddush of Tshuva is God rewrites the book. That scene is leaped out of the movie. It's gone. Kapara can scour. That's what it means. It scours away. It's gone. Just one other analogy. You're a thief, not you. One is a guy and conniving thief. They live a life which is debauched and inappropriate. And one day they wake up. From now on, I'm on the straight and narrow. No more averos. No more cheating. No more stealing. Pay my taxes. For 8 years, they're honest and true. And after 8 years, a cop says, you're under arrest. I'm under arrest. You're under arrest. I'm under arrest. You're under arrest. I'm under arrest. Sir, it's not funny. You're under arrest. What did I do? You stole. I stole. You stole. I stole. You stole. I stole. You stole. I stole. I said it 4 times. You stole. When did I steal? 8 years ago. 8 years ago. That's old. Whoa. That's old news. Listen, you owe money. I don't own a penny. Listen here. We may not put you in jail. We'll put a lien on your car. We'll take away your house. It's still there. That sin doesn't go away. But when you do proper tshuva, you can scour it away. It never happened. That's the gift that God gives us. And lastly, I heard many times from Chaim Shmulevitz, Zichron Lebracha, the sainted Mir Rosh Yeshiva, said, we're all looking for a schus to go into din. My parents' apartment is adjacent to a courthouse. I always try to make it my business if I come to America this time of year to go to court, to see someone on trial, to see what it's like to be sentenced, to get into that feeling. Chaim said, we're looking for schus for din. What we have to do is be careful to be down the kafschus, to judge favorably. For Chazal have taught us that the way you judge is the way that you'll be judged. In other words, you give someone else the benefit of the doubt, then God will award you the benefit of the doubt. It's a matter of perspective. I tell the story that a husband and wife were driving along the road, approaching the access lane up to the highway. And as they were driving, they heard over the CB radio that a car was driving in the wrong direction. Get onto the highway, and the husband turns to the wife and he says, look, it's not one car going in the wrong direction. It's dozens of cars going in the wrong direction. We think we're right, indeed often we think we are, but in fact we can't be mistaken. It's hard to separate ourselves from our perspectives because they represent ourselves. I call this the courtrooms of the mind. And indeed it's a courtroom because we can condemn someone to life or sentence someone to 10 years over nothing, over simple misunderstanding. People's careers have been destroyed over simple misunderstandings. We all know that Lashon Hara is a very grievous sin. As we mentioned today, Shabbos, we're just a week away from the Chofetz Chaim's Yahrzeit. We know that it's terrible, but we also know it's hard to refrain. The most puissant and efficacious way to avoid Lashon Hara is to learn to be Dam Lekav Schus, because if you judge favorably, you'll never be Nichshol. You'll never have the problem of Lashon Hara. It sounds simple, but... And if you can't relate to what I'm saying, that's wonderful. There are some people, very, very few, that are natively not judgmental. My wife, it's pretty funny, she goes down the streets on Shabbos in Yerushalayim, and she sees cars driving, she goes, oy vey vey, look at all these people going to the hospital. But if that's not your perspective, I can share some good advice. We don't always know the whole story. We miss one little detail, and we miss the entire story. How often does this happen? All the time. Miss one little detail, miss the whole story. I mentioned earlier today that because I teach in seminaries and in yeshiva, the difference between boys and girls is endless. But one other difference I noticed is that young women who go to seminary, they have this incredible wanderlust. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but in the 4 months they've seen places I never heard of. I'm in Israel 30 years. Whereas Yeshiva Bachrim, I don't really have a complimentary way of saying this, but they have a tendency to attach themselves to a particular family, and week after week after week they go back to the very same family. So it happened one Thursday night, this boy calls up, great news, guest is coming for Shabbos. The woman said, I'm very sorry, but I have high fever, I don't feel well at all. My husband's even more ill than I. This week we're not having company. He said, but it's me. And she said, even for holy you, this week we're not up to having company. Nunu, what could he do? No sooner had she hung up the telephone, and the upstairs neighbor from the apartment above came down and said, I don't know what we do without you. And then she remembered the woman upstairs, mother of a large family, was traveling to America that Sunday, and she'd offered that Shabbos prior to your trip. Why have all the problems of preparation prior to travel? We'd be happy to host you. She said, oh yes, I can't wait, we're looking forward to it. We don't need any reminders. She escorted a woman outside the door, pulled up Meir Sharm Kuil, ordered pre-cooked food, disposable items. Came Shabbos morning, mother came down with all of her children, large family. Kids were hanging from anything they could hang from, destroying anything destructible. Husband and wife were sitting at the table, feigning a happy countenance, despite their sickly condition. And then there's a knock on the door. Boys come to visit the sick. Comes inside, sees all these happy faces. What could he think? Well, we know what he could think. Unless he was taught to give the benefit of the doubt. So all I want to say to you, and leave you with, is some cogent advice to learn how to give the benefit of the doubt. It's not an easy thing to do, and yet we're obliged. An easier way to give the benefit of the doubt is to realize we don't hear things accurately. There are people like myself who speak quickly. There are people that have accents that are hard to decipher. Us Anglo-Saxons living in Israel are constantly, dynamically, perpetually giving Israelis a test, a trial, a nisayon of dam dekavschut, of judging favorably. Riotously funny stories. I meant to say one thing in Hebrew, suggest the opposite. I'll give you an example or two or three. I had a student, a real Amerikansky Yankee Doodle. It was her first day in Israel. She'd never been there before. She boarded a bus in Shalayim. And the gentleman sitting next to her in the aisle was sneezing. She said to him, Lehitraot, which means farewell. And he sneezed at him, Lehitraot. Finally, she gets off the bus. The bus driver waves to her, La Briut. That's even better. A woman in my neighborhood living in Israel longer than I, yet she hasn't quite caught the language. She walked into the fruit store, and I presume you know the word for peach in Hebrew is? Yes, you do. Afarseg. She walked into the fruit store and she said, Ani rotza apikores. It's a crumb neighbor. He goes, what? She said, I need apikores gadol. Give me your biggest blasphemer. He said, thank God, lady. We're all out. Then there are times you hear everything, still don't know the whole story. A little girl in my neighborhood, happens to be my daughter, one shot from her neighbor's house, and saw on the table a plate of cake. She went, she took a piece of cake, and the neighbor said, it's nicer if you ask. Apparently didn't make much impression. The little girl went back and took a second piece. The neighbor said, it's nicer if you ask. Still unimpressed, kid is about to go in for a third swoop. Neighbor strategically locates herself in the cake of my daughter, and she said, if you ask, it's nicer. To which, you have to know the kid. That's to which this little girl responded, but my mother said not to ask for anything. Which reminds me of two other ones. I was speaking in Florida, and at the last minute, one of my daughters, her grandparents flew to America for a bas mitzvah. At the last minute, I realized I'm extra mileage points. And I told her to fly down to Miami. My instructions were, meet me at 7:30 at Avis Rent-A-Car. 7:30, she's not there. I go to Avis, back to the terminal. I can't find her. I have a page over the public address system, and they're paging and paging and paging. It's now 7:45. Back to Avis, back to the terminal. If you know anything about Miami International Airport, all you hear is Spanish, cucaracha, cucaracha, cucaracha. Last for in a seat. Can't find the kid. It's now 7:50. At 8:30, I have to speak in North Miami Beach. It's not around the corner. They give me permission to go to the gate. They punch in on the computer. Flight came in on time. She was on the flight. Can't find the kid. Back to Avis, back to the terminal, 5 to 8 o'clock. What a shrek. Having a major anxiety attack. I can't find the kid. 5 after 8, 10 after 8. Back to Avis, back to the terminal, 7:45. What? I gotta go. But how do I leave? I take a little girl, 12-year-old girl out of Shalayim. I don't give her any money. I don't give her a phone number. All I tell her is Avis Rent-A-Car. But people are waiting for me. I gotta go. I'm running out of the airport here. Abba, I said, turn. Sheva, where were you? I went to the Rent-A-Car, and it wasn't there. I said, what do you mean it wasn't there? I went to the Rent-A-Car, it wasn't there. What do you mean it wasn't there? She tells me, don't forget this in Israeli speaking, there's Hertz, budget, dollar, trifti, in the pizza place. What are you talking about? Hertz, budget, dollar, trifti, in the pizza place. What are you talking? Show me. She takes me, she shows me Hertz, budget, dollar, trifti, in Avi's. And why should I be upset? Why is there more Avi's than Avis? Where else would they put a pizza place if not in the Rent-A-Car? And if you miss one detail, you miss the whole story. The other thing I was thinking is that I was flying to Europe. I just got on the plane. Ay, ay, ay. I just got on the plane. I remember I had something critically important to tell my wife. As soon as I land, I call the house. Phone is ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing. Finally, kid picks up the phone. If there's one thing I can't stand about Israeli manners, I'm sorry. One thing I can't stand about mannerism somewhere in the world is when a child answers the phone and says, Miza. Who's this? You make an erstwhile phone call, you get an interrogation. Miza. I said, Miza? He said, Baruch Tzvi. This kid is 6 years old, or maybe 9 years old, 7 years old. Between 5 and 10, this kid. I said, Miza? He said, Baruch Tzvi. And he said, Miza? I said, it's Abba. And he hangs up. Calling internationally, critically important call, kid hangs up. I called again. This time my wife picks up the phone and said, you're not going to believe what just happened. No, you're not going to believe. What happened? Phone is ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing. Kid picks up the phone. How do I explain this? The majority of phone calls that come to my house are usually for me. And therefore, as a matter of expedience, I usually answer the phone. Kid didn't even know that I had left. Once he picked up the phone, determined that I was on the line, he hung up. Never occurred that I could be calling in. And if you miss one detail, you've missed the whole story. Chazal have taught us that the way you judge is the way that you'll be judged. And this applies not just to strangers, but even to family members, to our spouse, to our children, to our parents, to our communal leaders, to our rabbis. One last story, I think I ended already, but it's very rabbinic to end several times. Yeshiva Mount Hill is a taxi parked out in the 30s. He asked the driver to take me up to the 90s. He gets in the cab, opens up the safer, begins to learn the riding uptown. They come to 72nd Street, they're arrested at a red light. Just then this fancy delancy lady is crossing the street with her two poodles. At that very moment, a mounted officer is crossing the street on top of his horse. Well, the poodles gets loose, goes under feet, the horse gets sliver, goes up in the air, and the cop comes crashing down on top of the taxi. That's the first scene. Next scene takes place 13 weeks later, and the Jew is suing the police department for damage he suffered inside the cab. Jew is called to the stand. Judge says, please tell us your rendition of what happened. I said, well, Your Honor, I hailed a taxi park cab in the 30s. He asked the driver, take me up to the 90s. I got in the cab, opened my book, began to study, riding uptown. We come to 72nd Street. We're arrested at a red light. Just then, this fancy delancy lady is crossing the street with her two poodles. At that very moment, a mounted officer is crossing the street on top of his horse. When the poodles got loose, when the underfeet horse got loose, went up in the air, and the cop came crashing down the top of the taxi. And your honor took such a jolt. I've been in pain ever since. I don't know what's going to be. Judge hears him out. Then he calls the cop to the stand. Cop starts talking about pipe betrayal. And said, just tell us what happened. I said, well, your honor, it's exactly like this fellow said. He said, precisely. He said, well, there is one little detail he left out. I said, what's that? He said, see, after I got off the hood of the car, I went over and said, how are you feeling? He said, thank God, I'm fine, praise the Lord, thank God, just fine. And the judge heard this, began to scratch his chin and rub his hair. He called up an attorney from the jury and he said, you know, I think your client is trying to pull a fast one on the police department. I think he's trying to squeeze them for money. Go back and ask, maybe some little detail he left out. Something would change the entire story. So the lawyer goes back to the client and says, judge thinks you're trying to pull a fast one. He's dubious of you being above the bottom line. Could be some little detail in the family which could change the entire story. Well, you better go back and testify. Little Yidla goes back to the stand, your honor, this is what happened. I hailed the taxi park cab in the 30s, asked the driver, take me up to the 90s. I got in the cab, opened my book, began to study riding uptown. We come to 72nd Street, we're stopped at a red light. Just then this fancy, delancy, schmancy lady is crossing the street with her two poodles. One was a black poodle, one was a white poodle. I cannot recall which is which. At that very moment, a mounted officer is crossing from the top of his horse. One of the poodles got loose, one undefeated horse got nervous, and another man came crashing down on top of the taxi. Then, after the cop got off the hood of the car, so the poodle was crushed, moaning and groaning, felt bad for poor poodle, took out his pistol, shot the poodle dead. Then he said the horse's front legs were broken. The bad for poor horse. Shot the horse. Then he came over and he said, how are you feeling? God, thank God, I'm fine. Mother of both, you missed one detail, you missed the whole story. The rule of public speaking is tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them, then tell them what you told them. We're in the home stretch now before Rosh Hashanah. We want to determine where our head is. What we speak about, what's important to us. And it's high time to set out our correct priorities. What I try and do is before Rosh Hashanah, just find some isolated moment to go sit down somewhere. Think over. I'm going to try and rectify this year once and for all. Make the small steps. Become a better person like I know I should. We have to make sure that the charata is genuine enough, the contrition, the remorse, that it can activate not just to hear it, but to do something. And the great schus before Yom HaDin is to learn to be Damnikav schus, to give the benefit of the doubt. And as we've already said, it doesn't just apply to strangers, but even to family. And then we'll be sure to be spared from the serious prohibition of Lashon Hara. I want to thank you, especially those of you that heard me all Shabbos long. Your forbearance of coming yet another time is remarkable. And I'd like to mention as well that I have outside some books and tapes. I think you'll find them enriching. I know I will.